Chapter 3, verses 1 to 14. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses! And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face, because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers. I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me. I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, What is his name? Then what should I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. As we start thinking about our seminar series, thinking about what God is like, I found this quote helpful. It's going to appear on the screen in a second. So we'll just wait for that to come up. Next slide. There we go. But I've only given you the second half of the quote. I want you guys to go into groups where you are, twos, threes, fours, fives, doesn't really matter, however big a group you want. Answer these two questions. How would your friends, neighbours, families, colleagues finish or start this sentence? And how would you do so? We need to discuss that in some groups, and then we'll come back together. I'll give you 2 or 3 minutes. The writer, a guy called A.W. Tozer, thinks about humanity. He says, what comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. You might want to quibble about whether it's the most important or one amongst many important things. But either way, it's a hugely significant thing. And if you're not convinced of that, let me try and convince you with two different people. So person A, what comes into their mind when they think about God is that kind of cuddly grandfather figure in the sky. And what that means is that person can live their life however they want and do whatever they want because that God isn't a threat to them. That God is someone they don't really have to listen to and has no bearing on their life. Their life is going to look like a life lived in kind of complete liberty, do whatever they want, whenever they want, because it doesn't matter. There's no consequences for them. Person B sees God as the one in the sky who constantly is wagging his finger, that stern judge who is constantly disappointed in people. That person's life is going to be one of obedience, probably, but dry, dull, kind of burdened obedience, where they do what they think God wants, but they constantly feel like God's disappointed with them, and they have no joy in their life whatsoever. Two people who, when they think about God, two very different things come into their minds, and therefore their lives look completely different. What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. And so the aim of this series over the next 3 Sundays is to try and get that picture more accurate, and not just the picture in our minds more accurate, but a picture in our hearts more accurate as well, so that we not only think of God rightly, but we feel rightly towards him. Because as we do so, it will change how we live. It will shape the way we respond to every situation. What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. We're looking at something called the attributes of God. That is, over the centuries, theologians have found ways to kind of describe what God is like. And they've come up with all these different words which are kind of classed under attributes. They go, they categorize them different ways. So some people try and categorize attributes in kind of two main categories. One is the kind of things that God is like and we are not. So things like omnipresent. We are not everywhere, God is. And then the categories that God is like and that he calls us to be like as well. So something like holy. God says, I am holy, and so you ought to be holy like I am. That's one way to split them up. Others split them up kind of attributes to do with what God is like in his kind of being, what God is like in terms of what he knows, and what God is like in terms of kind of his morality. We're going to simplify that right down. Here's the way we're going to split up what God is like. Here's our three words that are going to appear on the screen. God is big, God is good, and God is gracious. Because I can actually remember those words rather than the long, complicated ones that theologians use. God is big, God is good, and God is gracious. And so today, we're going to be thinking about the fact that God is big. So that's going to be yellow for us. God is big, God is good, and God is gracious. There's loads of places in the Bible we could go to see the bigness of God. One of them we looked at 2 weeks ago. So it was very, very tempting to just hit play on my Isaiah 40 sermon from 2 weeks ago. Because basically, I could have just rehashed that for today. I tried really hard not to. I'm very aware I come in and it feels like I only speak about one thing because I did a kid's slot on it last week as well. I promise I'm going to teach you the whole counsel of God and not just this one topic. It's just the way that the series have shaken out. What's going to appear on the screen in a second is a couple of questions, or one question. Go back into your groups. Look at those verses in Isaiah 40 we looked at 2 weeks ago. Don't read all of them because you'll spend your whole time reading. Just skim read them. Most of you would have been here a couple of weeks ago. If you weren't, don't worry. Isaiah 40 makes its point quite clearly at a surface reading. So just skim those and then just discuss very quickly what do these verses show us about what God is like, and then we're going to look at Exodus 3 for a chunk of time. It's much better to pull you back early and leave you wanting to think more about it than to kind of sit there awkwardly because one group is still talking somewhere over there. That wasn't directed at you. If you feel like you're just scratching the surface, that's absolutely fine. For the majority of our time, we're now going to look at Exodus 3. I hope from Isaiah 40 you saw something like the fact that God is incomparably big, completely different from us, that kind of thing. If you were miles away from that, I'm not quite sure what happened, but I'm assuming roughly in that ballpark. As we come to Exodus 3, something really significant happens. We have the story read where God reveals himself to Moses in the burning bush. He commissions Moses to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. And Moses said, well, God, if I'm going to go, the Israelites are going to challenge me. They're going to kind of say, well, who are you to just come and tell us that you're our leader now? Which is a completely fair point. What am I going to say? Who am I going to say has sent me? And God does something amazing. God reveals his name to Moses. His name, his very core. Lots of times in the Bible we kind of have titles for God, but here we get his very name. And what is it that God's name is? It's that. I am who I am. And that's really significant because in the Bible, names mean stuff. So probably most of you, your name was chosen because one of two categories, either because basically your parents liked the name or because there's a family history to the name. That pretty much is why most people have the names they do. You might be the exception to that rule. If so, come and tell me the story later. But roughly speaking, that is basically why we get named what we get named. In the Bible, it's not like that at all. When people get named, it's because there's something significant in the meaning of the name. So you just think through the first few chapters of Genesis. Adam is called Adam because that is the word for man and also linked to the word for earth because Adam is the first man who comes from the dust of the earth. Eve's name is linked to the word for life because she is the mother of all the living, according to Genesis 3. That is, every person who is ever born is a descendant of Eve. You keep going. Noah's name means comfort because he will bring comfort in the midst of judgment. Abraham, probably one of the most famous name changes in the history of the world. Abraham goes from being called Abram to Abraham because he will become the father of many nations, which is what Abraham means. In the Bible, names mean stuff. And so when God tells us his name, he isn't just telling us like what he likes to call himself. He's telling us something about who he is. And he says, I am who I am, which is probably the most enigmatic and confusing name in the whole world ever. And what he isn't being is being difficult. So if you imagine that you meet someone new and they ask your name and this is what you reply, they're either going to think you're really socially awkward or that you're just really sarcastic. They're basically the options. If we say this, we're being difficult. When God says this, it's not because he's being difficult. It's not because he's kind of batting Moses away and refusing to answer for his question. It's because he's revealing something really deep about who he is. That is that there is nothing that God can use to define himself properly. See, anything else God does, God gave himself as a name, would kind of put some kind of limit on what God is like. So if you think about birds for a second, so you think about a sparrow, a pigeon, and an eagle, all of them come under the category of birds. So each of them, if they could speak, could say, I am a bird. There is a category into which they all neatly fit. If God tried to define himself by anything else, he ends up putting a category into which he fits, and God defies all categories. What God is saying when he calls himself, I am who I am, is he is a God who is only defined in reference to himself. God is only defined in reference to himself. That is really confusing. But that's because God is bigger than we can possibly imagine. God is only defined in reference to himself. There is nothing outside of God that he can use to define himself. So lots of times in the Bible, God kind of gives us images for what he's like. We thought about that a couple of weeks ago, that he's the shepherd or the rock or whatever else. Because there is something in that that shows us something of what God is like. When it comes to his name, his very essence, if he said, I am shepherd, he massively limits what he is like. If he gave himself any other name, he massively limits what he is like. But instead he says, I am who I am, revealing this incredibly deep thing to Moses, saying, there is nothing else in your mind you can possibly use to define me. I am the God who defies limits and boundaries. And my quote's going to come up on our screen from a theologian a few hundred years ago called Stephen Charnock. This is what he says. He says, when you think about God, this is what you should then think. He says, whenever a picture of God comes into your mind, tell yourself, this is not God. God is more than this. See, there is nothing we can ever think about God that even begins to do justice to what he's really like. He is so much bigger. He defies all categories. There is no category into which he fits. There is no box into which you can fit God. And that kind of makes sense when we think about it, really. Because if you think about like humans for a second, there's no human in the world that we know fully. So you don't know anyone fully. So your closest friends, your spouse, family member, you know loads about them, but you don't know them fully. Even yourself, you don't know yourself fully. And if you don't believe me, wait till you do something that surprises you, because that proves you don't know yourself fully. If you've ever done something that surprised you, it means you don't know yourself fully. If we can't, as finite beings, know our finite selves fully, how could we possibly know the infinite God fully? God has no limits. Whatever comes into our mind when we think about God, this is not God. God is more than this. That doesn't mean we can't know anything about God, because you might at this point be like, well, that's great. What is the point of this seminar? If we're basically learning that we're going to get it wrong anyway. It's not to say that things we know are untrue. It's just to say they're not the fullness of it. We will only ever paddle in the shores compared to the ocean of what God is really like. And that is what God is saying when he tells Moses that he is who he is. He is telling us that he is absolutely without limits. And because he is without limits, because he's big, that means loads of other things are true about God as well. So I want you to cycle in your minds back to when you were in an RE lesson in school. So some of you, that might be like 5, 10 years ago. Some of you, that might be like 50 years ago. When you were in RE in school, you probably learned lots of long words beginning with O about what people say God is like. So God is omnipresent, he's omniscient, he's omnipotent. So God is all-knowing, all-powerful, he's everywhere. And we're going to throw eternal into the mix for the sake of this. Lots of long words about what God is like. Those are all just really different ways of saying God has no limits. So God is all-knowing because his knowledge has no limit. There's no point at which there's knowledge he doesn't know. God has no limits in his knowledge. God is omnipresent. That is, he is not limited by space and kind of geography because he sits outside of that. God is eternal because he's not limited by time. He is outside of time and above time. God is omnipotent, he's all-powerful, because there is nothing that can limit God's power. There is nothing that can stop him. Omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, eternal, all long words to explain what God is like, all summarized by the fact God is unlimited. God has no limits. He is big. And there's two implications of the fact that God has no limits. Two verses in the Bible are going to come up, which help us think a little bit about some of the implications of that. So Malachi 3, I, the Lord, do not change. See, because nothing outside of God can impact him in any way, that means he doesn't change. Because when change happens, that's because something either from within you or from without forces a change upon you. That isn't true for God. God is unlimited, so nothing outside him or from within will change him. And then Acts 17, the God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by human hands. He is not served by human hands, here's the key thing, as if he needed anything. God doesn't need anything from us, because if you have a need, you have a limit. If you have a need, you have a limit. So if you kind of think, oh, well, God needed to save us because otherwise he wouldn't be as happy as he otherwise would be, that means that without us doing something, God can't be happy. Without us, God can't be happy. So we limit God. God is limited in his happiness by people. That is not true. God does not need anything from us. He is absolutely unlimited. He's unlimited in his power, unlimited in his knowledge, unlimited in his presence, unlimited in his eternality. He's unlimited in his kind of inability to change. He's unlimited in the fact he doesn't need us. He's big. Really, really big. We're going to go into groups now and answer those two questions about these two verses, these implications of God's unlimitedness. Why are both of these verses such good news for us? And what would life be like if God wasn't like this? A few minutes in your groups. Sorry about that. I wonder what things you were discussing. Here's a couple of things for me that as to why these are really good news. If God changes, we can't trust any promise he ever makes. If God changes, we can't trust a single promise he ever makes, because what happens if he changes his mind? And if God needs us, what? And that's why he saves us. What happens tomorrow if he decides he doesn't need us anymore? That we just get chucked on the rubbish dump, wouldn't we? This is wonderful good news. God doesn't change. God doesn't need us. That is why we can stake our lives on what he says. We've been seeing this God is absolutely unlimited. This God is huge. But it would be remiss for us to not reflect on the fact that this God who has no limits chose to take on limits and experience limits in a body. The God who has absolutely no limits, who has never experienced kind of firsthand limits, chose to take on limits. And he didn't do it because he was kind of an interested observer. He wasn't one of these people, you know those kind of shows where like the boss becomes an employee for a day undercover and just to see what life is like for the employee. That wasn't why Jesus came to earth. He didn't do it just because he was interested to find out. Because if God is limited in his knowledge, that actually means he doesn't need to experience something to know what it's like. So he didn't do it just because of kind of because he was interested to know what it would feel like to be limited for a while. He did it solely for our benefit. There was no need in him that meant he had to come to earth. He did it entirely for our benefit to save us. And just think about that for a second. Jesus has, ever since eternity, has never experienced a single limit. Then he comes to earth and he becomes the most dependent creature in the world. He becomes a baby. He becomes the God who knows no limits. Chooses to put himself in a position where he is absolutely dependent on his mother for everything. The God who doesn't know change, who has never changed, in Jesus, goes through puberty. It's not a slightly bonkers thought. The God who has never changed experiences the changes of puberty. The God who knows no limits got tired. Hungry, thirsty, he experienced the limits of a human body. And he did all of that solely for our benefit. He did it solely because he set his heart on us, because he loved us. That is what the limitless God does for us. And some more verses are going to appear on the screen. And those verses are going to be verses that are probably really precious to us. In different ways, I imagine these verses have been lifelines for many of us at different points. What I want you to do is to go into your groups, because you may never have thought about it this way before. Why is this big view of God, this view of God as unlimited, essential to actually make these verses be any comfort to us? Go into your groups. Feel free to just pick one or to work through all three. Why is a big view of God, this view of God is unlimited, essential for these verses to actually be any comfort to us? Long words, these attributes of God, to start kind of thinking they're these like interesting conversations for academics. I'm hoping that we start to see that they are way more than that, that they are essential for building our lives on the promises of God. That without that, actually, there is just no real comfort in the Christian faith. If God isn't the God he reveals himself to be, we can't really have any confidence in what he says. The fact that God is big, unlimitedly big, is really good news for us. Here's the big way I think it'd be useful to apply this together. It's going to come up on the screen. Because God is limitless, we don't have to be. Because God is limitless, we don't have to be. Now, for some of you, that might be a bit of a challenge. Because if you're anything like me, there are times where you kind of really try hard to convince yourself you actually are pretty limitless. And that you really can do stuff on like by yourself. And you really can basically just do everything. If that's you, let me tell you very directly, God doesn't need you. God doesn't need you. You aren't the hero of the story. Jesus is. Let me show you a little bit about how that might play out. Maybe there's something you're involved in here at Woody Road or some kind of thing you're involved in outside of church life. And kind of really the narrative in your head goes a little bit like, well, if I don't do this, no one else is going to. And if I don't do it and no one else does, then it's not going to happen and it's all going to fall apart and God's not going to be glorified and it's really all on me. Ever thought like that? Even a little bit? See, the minute we do that, that is because we don't understand that we are not the limitless one. God is. And so when we feel the limits of our capacity, it's good to say no. It's good to not just say yes, 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 yes to everything. Because if you do say no, it's okay. It's good for us because it reminds us we're not the hero of the story. God is. If we say no because we're hitting our limits, it's not a disaster for God. It's a disaster for us if we keep saying yes when we can't really do it. Some of you need to hear that as a challenge. Some of you probably need to hear this as liberation. Because you've been kind of enslaved by this kind of idea that you really genuinely have to keep doing and doing and doing and doing, and you just can't say no because that's admitting you're a failure. If that's you, know that God doesn't think you're a failure just because you can't do everything. We live in a society where it feels like there is basically pressure on people to be able to do everything. So I don't know about you, but I kind of get the sense talking to people that kind of it's no longer good enough to just be academic or just be athletic or just be funny or just be sociable or just be hardworking. You kind of have to be all of them. And if you're bad at one single one of those, that's the trait that people seem to notice and pick up on. Just go on social media for any length of time and that's basically what happens. Kind of professional sports people, politicians, they can be brilliant at 99% of stuff. If they're rubbish at the 1%, that's all people focus on. You have to be brilliant at everything. Maybe for some of us, it's that kind of, you have to have a really brilliant, successful career and be able to raise the perfect family. And if you can't do both of those with absolutely all of your energy and do them absolutely perfectly, you're a failure. You're not. You're not a failure because you can't do both as well as you'd like. Very, very few people can. Some people have incredible capacities. Most of us, our capacities are just quite small, and that's okay. Because God has made us that way. He's made us that way to drive us to him. That lifts the burden, doesn't it? It's okay to accept our limits because God is limitless. It's okay to accept our limits because God is limitless. See, God doesn't expect us to be what we can't be. God doesn't expect you to be in two places at once because he knows that you can't, but he can. God doesn't expect you to be able to make a decision fully knowing every single implication of the choice you're about to make because you don't know the future. But he does. We can accept the limits that come with our humanity because we worship and serve a God who has no limits. And so that is absolutely okay. We can stop because God never stops. We can sleep because God never sleeps. We can rest because God never rests. He is limitless. He also seems to have a sense of humor because this week, when I was thinking about the fact that humans are limited, he gave me a cold. Thanks, God. This week, I have had moments where I haven't been able to do everything I want to do. because I've been too tired. This week, I've had moments where I haven't kind of done something as well as I want to because I've had a fuzzy head and I can't really quite think the way I normally think. I've had moments this week where I haven't really heard what someone said because I've been too busy sneezing or coughing. God has never had any of those moments. God has never had to stop and have a lie down from ruling the universe because he had a cold. God has never not done something as well as he wanted to because he had a fuzzy head. God has never not heard your prayer because he was too busy coughing. He doesn't have limits like us. So whenever we feel our limits, which we all will do eventually, and we all probably do most of the time, those might be limits kind of put on us by medical conditions or age. They may be limits just because we're trying to do everything and we realize we really can't. Whenever we hit up against our limits, remember that's a good thing. God wants us to know our limits because he wants us to go to him, the limitless God. Every time we hit up against our limits, let it drive us to this big God, the God who has absolutely no limits. What comes into our mind when we think about God is the most important thing about us. God is limitless. God is big. That's what we've been learning today. And that means we can trust his promises. And that means we don't have to be limitless. I'm going to go into groups. I'm going to spend a few minutes praying. We don't have loads of time left, so don't kind of spend ages talking. Just kind of get straight down to praying, and then we'll sing after that. So kind of a few minutes to pray, and then I'll kind of tell the band when it's time to sing.